This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Meghna Chakrabarty is out today. Today, many of us are once again trying to process a senseless act of brutal violence in America. More than a dozen people gunned down in cold blood in a Denver movie theater. For most of us, it's the latest headline about tragic events that happen to other people, usually far away. But the reach of random violence sometimes, maybe more often than we'd like to acknowledge, can creep uncomfortably close to us. That's one of the themes that runs through this next story.
I'm standing at 7th and I Street in Northwest in Washington, D.C. It's right in the middle of Chinatown, big bustling neighborhood, and I'm a block away from NPR.
This is Annie Ropeek. She's a former intern who worked here at Radio Boston. The fact that she's with us at all to tell her story is the good news. But what happened to her when she was working as an intern for NPR 2 years ago is terrifying.
There's lots of people, a lot of interns in the summer, and definitely a busy area all times of day.
When Annie came to work for us, she was about to graduate from BU. She was a bright, eager young woman with one physical characteristic that was hard to miss. She walked with a limp and used a cane. Most of us didn't know why, and we didn't ask. But at the end of her internship, the staff took Annie out to lunch. And that's when she told us what happened to her. So here's Annie, who went back to D.C. this summer to recall what happened 2 years ago, just outside of NPR headquarters.
The first time that I drove by, I really built it up in my head, and I got pretty nervous just to see it again. But there's really no sign that anything happened here. I was planning to stay late at work that day, so I woke up late. Took the metro in to Gallery Place. I went to Starbucks, which I did almost every morning, and that's down the block. And then I crossed the street from the Starbucks, and I walked up 7th Street on the same side of the street. And when I was stopped at the crosswalk at I Street waiting for the light to change, I was attacked by a stranger who came up behind me and stabbed me in the back. I had my headphones in. I remember the band I was listening to was called Blind Pilot. And I was wearing jeans and like a striped linen blouse. And I had my bag on my shoulder, big leather bag, which actually later on we found some wounds in the bag itself. And we think that it may have protected me from further harm. I felt like someone was pulling my hair, kind of. And I tried to turn around and I couldn't, and I fell in the street. And at that point, I realized that I was bleeding badly from my neck and then my back. This woman was standing over me holding a little switchblade, probably 3 or 4 inches, black switchblade, staring down at me with it. And I remember thinking that sort of weirdly, objectively, that that was, you know, that was going to be it and she was going to kill me. She was a small African-American woman. She was wearing a vest and like a jean skirt. I remember I'd actually seen her across the street when I was crossing from Starbucks, just for like 1 second, the way you see any stranger passing you. And I remember just noting that she was wearing really tall heels for that early in the day. It was around 9:30 in the morning. And I don't think I made eye contact with her. I was wearing sunglasses. She just looked absolutely enraged. Then she dropped the knife and just kind of walked away toward NPR. I kind of rolled over and I was trying to crawl back toward the curb and I was screaming for help. I realized I had a wound in my neck right above my collarbone on the left side. There was an incredible amount of blood. It was just down to the curb. And it felt like a really long time before anybody helped. And I remember thinking for what felt like an extremely long time that nobody was going to help me. And finally, a guy came up. He called 911 and he held my hand. Another woman called my mom. I was kind of thinking still that I might die. I wasn't really sure what was happening. I was thinking a lot of things, and some of them were ridiculous, like I shouldn't have been late for work, or that this was not the band that I wanted to die listening to. I remember thinking that I was really sad that this had happened right in the middle of the very end of my project, which I'd spent all summer working on. I was very aware of everything. I mean, vividly aware of, like, the street that I was lying on. And imagine lying in the middle of a bustling city intersection on the asphalt, like lying in the middle of the crosswalk, almost in the street. It was sometime in there I realized that I couldn't feel my left leg or move it. It felt like, and it still does sometimes feel this way, when I'm lying on my back, it feels as though my knee is crooked up, because I think that that was the position it was in the last time that I could feel it. Turned out one of the five wounds that I had nicked my spine and cut it partially. So I'm not angry. People ask me that all the time, and I think they don't believe me when I say I'm not, but the woman was not well, and it wasn't her fault, you know, that she was not well. She should have been better cared for, and she shouldn't have been out on the street where this could have happened. But I could have been anybody, and I think in a way she also could have been anyone, if that makes sense. The most I could say is that it has been incredibly frustrating to just be at a certain point in your life. I was 20 years old when this happened, and in the middle of college, and I had a dream internship, and everything was going right, and it just changed a lot of things. And, you know, I'm still here, and I'm pretty much on the same track I would have been anyway, but it took a lot of work to get back there.
So today, 2 years after that attack, Annie is still recovering, working regularly with a team of physical therapists. The multiple stabbing attack left wounds in her hip, neck, and spine. It could have been a lot worse, but recovery has not been straightforward or easy. Annie spent 5 weeks in the hospital and was forced to leave college. She's spending this summer focusing full-time on her recovery, and she's writing about it for WBUR's Common Health blog. And her first post went up today, and you can find a link to it at radioboston.org. And Annie Ropeek is with us now in the studio. Hi, Annie. Good to have you.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks.
So it's good to see you sitting here looking as well as you do. But tell us what doctors found when they first got you to the hospital.
Well, I was bleeding pretty badly, and they gave me some morphine. And I had told the paramedics that I couldn't feel my left leg. Mm. There was a neurologist on hand, and he ordered me into an MRI straight away to see what was going on with my spine, and it turned out that the knife had nicked my spinal cord right sort of in the middle of my back in that one wound that had cut off the nerves to my left leg and some of the nerves to my right that did various different things.
So it was that wound, even more than the one to your neck, that turned out to have done the most damage, right?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that.
It hit my spine right in the area where the nerves cross over to go down the rest of my body. So on the left side, it was the nerves that control motion and the muscles. And on the right side, it was the nerves that control sensation. So that's pain and temperature. So I can move my right leg fine, but I can't feel those sensations. And I still really can't to this day because the nerves regrow so slowly. Mm. And on the left side, it was those muscles that were cut off. So it was a couple of days until the first motion happened.
And that must have been quite a relief when you could move your left leg again.
It was. It was sort of a surprise. You know, it's the kind of thing where I don't know I can do it until it happens. And they just asked me to kind of kick. And it was like a reflex sort of kick, like when they hit your knee with the hammer.
Hmm. So it's been nearly 2 years since the attack, as we mentioned. You're walking now with the help of a cane. We just heard sound from one of your physical therapy sessions. I want to ask you how that process is going.
It is going fantastically. At this point, PT is sort of more about what I put in rather than trying to find any sort of major improvements that are left to be made. You know, all of those big muscles have basically come back. So now it's more about improving my strength and stamina and my walking gait, which does get better every day. And it's really exciting to see.
And tell me a little bit about what your physical trainers and your physical therapists are saying about this specific injury.
So at Boston Medical right now, and I've been doing this for about a year, the therapy is based on a treadmill. I get up in a harness and I walk, and they help move my legs and just try to get me to remember sort of these muscle memories that are in there somewhere, and I just have to wake them back up again. And we recently recorded some of my physical therapy session, and I asked my physical therapist, Trey Downey, some questions about my treatment. Let's take a listen.
And in terms of what we're trying to accomplish here, there's two theories with this. There's neuroplasticity, which is basically with activity, the nerves can regenerate and reconnect. And then the other one is the CPGs, which is the central pattern generators. And essentially what that is you never forget how to ride a bike. So essentially your body never forgets how to walk. It's just reconnecting that pattern by manually cueing her hamstrings and her lower extremities and her hips. We can kind of recreate that pattern, and hopefully that the nervous system can kind of relearn the old pattern.
Annie, it's an interesting idea, this idea that the nerves don't actually forget. You just have to kind of prompt them to relearn. Right.
It's basically you're teaching the muscles to do the same things in new ways. So they're kind of rerouting around the nerves that they can't use anymore. Basically, that involves learning each little tiny reflex that goes into something like walking, which is huge, or something as small as wiggling my toe, and kind of building that up from the ground up manually. And I have to remember all of those things separately the way that a normal person would just kind of do them subconsciously. I mean, if you think about how complicated it actually is to walk. Mm.
And of course, it's something we learned as tiny babies many, many, many years ago.
Right. Yeah. So I can't even exactly remember sort of what that looks like because I'm so used to being able to not think about it.
And Annie, you said you feel like you're making a lot of progress. What do your physical therapists and the doctors, what do they say to that question about are you making progress?
Well, I'm definitely making great progress, and I think they would say the same. You know, they don't like to say, you'll be better today. But I'm where they hoped I would be, I think, or better. And we also asked my physical therapist, Trey, what he thought of my progress over the past year.
What would you say the main thing that's changed since the fall?
Definitely the strength in your legs and your endurance, too,
which has caused like the positioning of your knee and how you walk to change a little bit, too. Like, you feel more comfortable, you know, more confident walking outside of here than you were before, weren't you?
Yeah, totally. You became less. I feel like I'm faster.
You're definitely a fast walker. there's no doubt about that.
That was our breakthrough when we realized that I looked better faster.
But at the same time, I'm kind of in this plateau phase. You know, they say once you hit about a year, then that's kind of when the big improvements tend to drop off a little more. And so this is the kind of recovery that I could be doing potentially for the rest of my life, sort of as much as I want to be doing it. And just kind of chipping away at these little tiny improvements.
Mm. So to this point, Annie, we've been talking about your physical wounds and physical recovery. What about emotional wounds? Because, you know, you survived an incredible trauma. We heard you a short while ago say that you're not angry. But tell us what you've been dealing with on the emotional side of this story.
Well, it's been a roller coaster, to be sure. I definitely went through a period at the very beginning where I was questioning why this would happen to me and sort of trying to come to grips with the randomness of it. Mm. Once I got back to school in the spring of 2011, the winter was really bad that year, and I was trying to do too much with classes and things like that, and I was overwhelmed by my new limitations that I hadn't really kind of anticipated how I was going to deal with. I got into a period where I was really hanging everything on my injury, regardless of how related it was, and sort of saying, I wouldn't have turned this paper late if this hadn't happened to me and things like that. So after that whole crazy winter with all that snow, it finally was sunny out. I think it must have been about April. And I was living in Brookline on St. Paul Street at the time. And I put on a sundress and some sandals that were bad for my feet. And I walked to Amory Park, which was, you know, about the farthest walk I was comfortable doing. But it was definitely surprisingly easy. And my friends had been telling me all spring they thought I was looking better. And that was the first time I really sort of noticed it myself, I think. And that was a big day. You know, that was the first day where I think I kind of came out of the woods and said that, you know, I think that I could be okay.
Annie, you've been talking about getting stronger and walking better, but you also mentioned that this recovery process might be something that you'll be dealing with for the rest of your life. Do you have a goal? Is the goal, for example, to walk without a cane one day? Or how are you thinking about that?
Yeah, we have a lot of goals. You know, I walk pretty well with without the cane right now, and I think that we want to start using that less and less. We've been jumping and jogging in physical therapy, which were a couple of my little goals, and we just decided that we want to get me on a bike again. And that's sort of one of the few things left that I think I can't really do anymore that I used to do before. So hopefully that'll happen.
Mm. I'm really curious to know what happened or what you know about the woman who stabbed you. What happened to her?
Yeah, she was arrested right up the block, right after it happened. Someone tackled her. She had just kind of strolled away. She had priors. She was mentally ill and off her medication. Should have been better cared for by her family and the city and wasn't. The district attorney who is representing me and her representation agreed to settle on an insanity plea out of court. So I had to give a grand jury testimony about what did happen and just making sure that I didn't know her and it wasn't provoked and what my recovery was looking like, things like that. And so they settled out of court on that, and she's now at St. Elizabeth's in D.C.
Finally, Annie, we mentioned that because of the attack and your recovery, you were forced to take time off from college. Since then, you did return to school. Tell us where you are academically right now.
Well, I graduated on time this past May with all of my degrees and everything that I wanted to get, a classics and philosophy degree and a journalism minor. And it was great. I mean, everyone was always sort of surprised to hear that I graduated on time, but it worked out really well.
Well, Annie, congratulations, and thanks again for coming in and sharing your story with us. And we're glad that you're on the road to recovery. Thanks again.
Thank you.
That's Annie Ropeek. She's writing about her recovery from a multiple stabbing attack 2 years ago in Washington, D.C. for WBUR's Common Health blog. You can find a link to her first post as well as a video of her physical therapy at radioboston.org. And that's our program for today. Next week on Radio Boston, when the Red Sox first took the field at Fenway Park 100 years ago, all the players were white. But there were plenty of great black ball players playing the game in Boston. We'll look at the history of Boston's black teams in the days before integration. That's next week. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com. I'm Anthony Brooks. Have a great weekend. Stay cool. Join us again Monday for more Radio Boston.